Well, Silverstein's The Giving Tree is a minimalist picture book that tells the story of a lifelong relationship between a tree and a boy. When the boy is young, he plays with the tree, climbing her trunk, eating her apples, and resting in her shade. As he grows older, he visits the tree less often, usually when he wants something. The tree gives him her apples to sell for money, then her branches to build a house, and finally, her trunk to make a boat. Each time, the tree gives everything she has because it makes her happy to make the boy happy. Eventually, the boy grows old and returns once more, now a tired old man. The tree, reduced to a stump, says she has nothing left to give, but the boy only wants a quiet place to sit and rest. The tree is happy again as he sits on her stump. The book is often read as a meditation on unconditional love, selflessness, and sacrifice, though it's also been interpreted as a critique of selfishness, exploitation, or unbalanced relationships. I have to admit, it was read often at the camp where I was a staffer some 40 plus years ago, and frankly, it always gave me the ick. I can only hope that all those campers have come across the more recent ending that fixes this book. Playwright Topher Payne wrote an alternate ending, The Tree Who Set Healthy Boundaries. This all alternate ending version reimagines the story with a more mutual and emotionally healthy dynamic between the boy and the tree. In this version, the tree still loves the boy deeply. But when he begins to ask for her apples, branches, and trunk, she says, "Whoa, I was happy to give you the apples so you can make money. Those grow back. But I draw the line at cutting off my branches so you can have a house." Instead of giving away parts of herself until nothing remains, the tree sets boundaries, explaining that she can share her apples if the boy wants to plant the seeds, or that he can build something near her rather than cutting her down. The boy learns the value of reciprocity and respect, understanding that healthy relationships involve both giving and preserving oneself. By the end, in the new version, the two grow old together in harmony, the tree still standing tall, the boy grateful for her continued shade and companionship. And the boy especially was better for it. Payne's version reframes the story as one about mutual respect, self-care, and sustainable love, teaching that kindness doesn't mean self-destruction. We've all been both the boy and the tree at times, giving too much or asking too much, and it's only through honest conversation and forgiveness that we grow back together. Brené Brown, in her book Atlas of the Heart, writes that compassion is fueled by understanding that we're all made of strength and struggle. No one is immune to pain or suffering. Compassion is not a practice of better than or I can fix you. It's a practice based in the beauty and pain of shared humanity. And in her research, Brown found that the most compassionate people she interviewed also have the most well-defined and well-respected boundaries. She explains that this is because compassionate people ask for what they need, say no when necessary, and are clear about what is and is not okay, which helps them avoid resentment and allows them to be present and generous with others. Compassion requires clear boundaries. Brown states that we can't connect with someone unless we are clear about where we end and they begin. Brown is drawing upon a quote by Prentice Hill, "Boundaries are the distance at which I can love you and me simultaneously." By setting boundaries, compassionate people avoid resentment, which is crucial for giving from a full and generous place, rather than a depleted one. Compassionate people aren't people pleasers. They have the courage to state their needs and say no when they need to, which allows them to say yes with their whole heart. Brown connects clarity with kindness, saying clear is kind, unclear is unkind, because clear boundaries allow people to be more respectful to both themselves and others. Compassion flourishes not only in open hearts, but also within strong systems. And being clear with each other allows us to make our own choices. The truth really does set us free. A Harvard study of 724 couples who made it past 30 years revealed something surprising. What kept them together wasn't love, sex, or kids. It was the ability to tolerate the same things in each other over and over again. The ones who divorced thought, "This habit drives me crazy, but I can fix it." The ones who stayed, they accepted this is who they are. They're not changing. If I'm going to love them, this is what I get. I get who they really are. The study shows that long-term relationship spouses rarely resolve every conflict. That's a myth. Couples who lasted 30 plus years didn't dig forever into every hurt feeling. They learned to let go, not suppress, but release. You forgot again. You said the wrong thing again. Short-term couples turned that into a fight. Long-term couples let it slide because they choose peace over being right. The real skill of lasting couples? Quick emotional recovery. It's not about never fighting. It's about bouncing back fast. He snapped 2 hours ago, and now he's hugging her. No pride. No, you go first. In marriages that last, the winner isn't the one who's right. It's the one who comes back first. The strongest couples weren't bonded by "we have everything in common," but by "we face the world together." And the biggest truth? Almost every long-term marriage had a point where they were ready to call it quits. Almost all of them. But they didn't. Not because they couldn't, but because they gave it more time. The most common answer? I decided to do nothing, and 6 months later, things shifted. Turns out, most marriage crises die off if you just stop feeding them. These three stories all point toward the same truth. Healthy love, whether between people or within a group, such as a congregation, requires both compassion and boundaries. Today, on this new Member Sunday, I wonder how this applies to us, to this congregation, to faith communities. We will leave the health of nonprofit organizations for another time, but I do want to talk about the health of the congregational system here at UU Loudoun. And my answer to, does the same apply here as to long-term marriages in that Harvard study, is yes and no. Yes, because if we keep love at the center as we aspire to do, we do need to accept people as they are and honor the inherent worth and dignity of all beings. Our UU values call us to that. The Unitarian Universalist Young Adult and Campus Ministry leaders often reminded each other about certain challenging personalities and to say that some people need extra grace. People need extra grace. Not all people all the time, but some people some of the time. And sometimes I'm the one who can use extra grace, and I'm grateful when it's extended. Here's the thing about that, though. It doesn't mean that all behaviors get excused. Grace does and should have edges, not sharp edges that cut, but edges that are boundaries, edges that define. Those spaces where we know where each of us begins and ends. The well-being, strength, and reputation of our church depend on a sense of community among the members, friends, and staff. A community which thrives in an atmosphere of trust, respect, and cooperation. Within such an atmosphere, differences of opinion and their resolution through compromise or consensus can enhance a sense of belonging. However, differences or misunderstandings that go unresolved and descend into prolonged conflict can threaten the social fabric of our congregation. We expect that conflict will arise from time to time, and that it's really normal when it does. Its management and resolution are paramount and tended to. UU Loudoun has what we call a covenant of loving relations. In other congregations, you may hear it referred to as a covenant of right relations. Just so you know, they're the same thing. You may find a copy in a frame on the back wall, and we also have a conflict resolution procedure, which is being updated. I want to unpack for you what it looks like in real time to honor this covenant of loving relations, and I'm borrowing this from the Chalice UU congregation in Escondido, California. So what does it mean for us to abide by the covenant of loving relations here at UU Loudoun? It means we agree to approach our resolution of differences, not with preconceived outcomes or specific demands, but with open minds and open hearts. It means we agree to talk directly with the person with whom there are concerns and not to seek to involve others in gossip or alliance buildings. It means that we aren't going to go talk to a bunch of people in order to build a case against a person and then come and present the findings. Go directly to the person with your concerns. And I promise you that if you come to me and then several other people come to me with the same concern without having been lobbied, I pay attention to that. I will not dismiss your concerns. Abiding by the covenant of loving relations also means that we agree to make a sincere commitment to listen to one another, to try to understand the other person's point of view. It means we agree to focus on the issues and not to attack the person with whom we disagree. It means we agree to communicate face-to-face, which is best, or over the phone, if necessary, and not through email when there is a conflict or concern. And I will tell you that I find this congregation to be pretty good with that. Or maybe I should be clear that you don't try to resolve conflicts via email. And that's a good thing. It means we agree that if we find ourselves in conflict that we are unable to resolve on our own, we will follow our congregation's conflict resolution procedure in order to maintain the health of our community. Abiding by the covenant of loving relations means that we agree that we will strive to preserve our congregation's health by meeting with the minister or to allow the board to pull together a good relations team or conflict resolution team if requested to do so, and that we will honor the process. We often hear the question, is there a spiritual practice that is particularly Unitarian Universalist? Perhaps one of our spiritual practices is living into our covenantal relationships. Being in community can be challenging, but being in a faith community can give us the opportunity to explore our edges and test our assumptions. I thought these 18 questions could be helpful for all of us as a reminder of how we might, as a spiritual practice, remain true to our covenants, and maybe it is also helpful for us in our relationships out in the world. And for those of you who are listening to this sermon online, there are papers in the back of the sanctuary that you can pick up with these questions on them. And if you are not able to get to church, you can find these questions by searching the UUA website for Reverend David A. Miller, who, yes, is my husband. He did these lists of questions for a congregation that he served earlier in his ministerial calling. So, number one, what intentions are we assuming of the other, and what impact are we having no matter our intentions? Am I communicating directly with the person with whom I am having an issue? Am I resolving issues or am I spreading them through gossip, anger, and/or frustration? Am I reflecting on what personal wounds, issues, and tendencies of mine that are contributing to the issue? Am I willing to be an active participant and to work in good faith to clear up issues? Am I projecting onto someone else through my own framework what they are thinking or doing versus engaging them and asking them to share their thoughts and story? Am I actually trying to live the values of this Unitarian Universalist faith by acting with compassion, respect, and a high value of our interdependence? Am I actively listening to what others are saying and not formulating a response or the next comment or question while they are talking? Can I let go of my need to control the situation? Can I graciously leave space for others by letting someone else speak first, especially those not traditionally centered, or by not speaking my mind if the point has already been raised or made already? Can I help lift up the life of another or the group in my words and actions? Can I have disagreements with an individual or group, do so in love and respect, and continue to stay in community? Can I take into account the importance of the task in relation to the importance of the relationship? Can I reflect on how my attitude and actions contribute to the culture of our community? Am I willing not to have to be right? Well, see, I see some faces out there. Not just am I willing not to be right, but am I willing not to have to be right? Am I being the change I wish to see in the world and really acting in the way that models beloved community? Am I willing to change? And another way that I would say this is, am I willing to be changed by this? Not just is there a willingness in me to change, but am I willing to take in something that is happening and be changed by it? And finally, can I remember to ask the question, what is the most loving thing I can do or say right now? What is the most loving thing I can do or say right now? Which at times can be hard to say and even harder to hear. These are yours to take home and ponder, not just for this congregation, but for you personally as well. Like long-term relationships, healthy congregations last not because there's no conflict, but because we learn how to recover quickly, forgive often, and stay connected through the hard moments. We keep love at the center. This Unitarian Universalist faith calls us not to give ourselves away until nothing is left, but to grow together like a living forest, rooted, generous, and whole. When we honor our covenants and set healthy boundaries, we create the kind of community where compassion can truly thrive. May we be trees that give shade and shelter, and also know when to rest and renew, so that love, in its truest form, continues to grow among us. Blessed be and Amen.